You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
NBA Most Valuable Player, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis trailing the lob. Ooh. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
1 second. Middleton. Yes! Chris Middleton.
Nice jumper. Got it!
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Hey there. Welcome to the Eurostep, a Milwaukee Bucks podcast, proudly a part of the Eurostep Podcast Network and, of course, the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I am Ty Windisch, one of your hosts. I am joined, as always, by the well-prepared, not just prepared, well-prepared Rohan Kadi as we sit down to preview the Bucks Eastern Conference Final Series. You know, Rohan, I fell asleep early last night. I have to assume this is against the Philadelphia 76ers, correct? There's no way that team would lose a Game 7 at home against the Atlanta Hawks without two wing players, with another one hobbled. They couldn't have lost that game, could they?
See, you would think that, Ty. Like, this is the number one seed. This is the guy. This is the team who has, like, two Defensive Player of the Year candidates, who has the MVP runner-up that made such a big deal about winning in the regular season and getting that number one seed. You would think that they're going to just, you know, win a Game 7 at home against Trae Young and the Hawks, right? You'd think. But actually, they lost. They lost that game at home. The Atlanta Hawks beat the Philadelphia 76ers on their home court. Philly fans were rightfully booing their team off the court and into the offseason.
I'm glad. It's a good thing you're the well-prepared one.
Kangaroo Kid Gilchrist is getting all the slander in the world, and it's just beautiful.
I'm glad that you're well prepared. I was not possibly ready for this development, although we both called Hawks in six, I think.
I will say, the series. These are the conference finals we predicted.
That's true. We literally did. Oh, that's spicy. Hawks in six. We were a little off. Hawks in seven. But, man, that is – you got to give credit to the Hawks, and I don't want anyone, myself and you, Rohan, included, to completely overlook this team. The Bucks still need to win four of the next seven games to go to the finals. It's not a done deal, but this is an opponent that has less proven talent than I think either of us expected to see.
Do they, though? Like, are we saying that Philly has proven talent? At least Atlanta's proving it. They made a conference finals. Philly hasn't.
Fair.
Embiid's never been to a conference finals. Simmons has never been to a conference finals. They've never been out of the second round in their careers. Atlanta's proving themselves. They have the more proven talent because they're proving it right now.
Yeah, I mean, none of their players have ever come second in MVP voting. Or
they don't even have an all-star.
They don't even have an all-star. Did Philly have two this year or just one? Probably just one.
I think it was just one. But I think Atlanta's the first. Atlanta's the first team since like the 84 Pacers to make the conference finals without an all-star.
Oh, wow.
It's just wild.
I think they're going to have one next year based on all that they've done this postseason. But regardless, you said it well. I mean, this is the team that got there almost always deserves to be there. So that's true for the Bucks, who a lot of people are ignoring right now, talking about what could have, would have, should have been with Brooklyn. Same deal on the other end of the bracket. So Bucks fans should know more than anybody not to listen to some of these, you know, again, coulda, woulda, shoulda been narratives. The deserving teams got this far.
But also, make fun of the Sixers.
Yeah, I mean, that's – come on. I mean, the process to get to the second round.
Jordan had the process over results tweet queued up and ready to go right as soon as the game seven buzzer sounded for Atlanta's victory. It was just – it was perfect.
I mean, like, the Washington Wizards have gotten to the second round in recent – they didn't need – with John Wall and Brad Beal, they got to – they didn't need a process to do that. So not great. Not great if you give up multiple years of your franchise's relevance to the extent where the NBA has to get involved, too weak-willed to tell them no, and you fire your general manager, and then you burn I don't even know how many top picks, and one of them has turned out well at this point. And now here you are. And Doc Rivers, who was vehemently said, no issue with Ben Simmons. Can Ben Simmons be the point guard on a championship team? I don't know. Better question, can Doc be the coach on a championship team anymore?
According to Josh Smith, do you see Josh Smith's Instagram story?
No, I didn't watch it.
He was going all in. He even threw a Mike Woodson shot in at the end. It was just beautiful.
Doc Rivers has a 340 some record in elimination games, I think, as a head coach.
Worst in NBA history.
That's like a very good player's batting average in the MLB. That's like a good Mike Trout year. He probably has a similar chance of getting on base against MLB pitching than Doc Rivers does of winning an elimination game in the playoffs. Like, that's a low.
And have you seen MLB pitching? Like, my
it's good. They're good. And they're using freaking super glue to spin
not
the ball.
Long.
Yeah, we'll see.
Alleged. Alleged.
Let's talk about Bucks Hawks, though. We'll get more Sixers slander in. For the rest of our lives, really. I mean, this is not when
the Milwaukee offseason begins. We still got time for that.
Philly's
already started.
Yeah, they got a head start. They got to work on appeasing Seth Curry, one of their two best players. So they have a lot to do right now. But Bucks Hawks, I think this is going to be a fascinating series. It's not the one we expected, at least coming into the postseason. It's not at this point. Maybe we expected it in the first round, but not now. I think it's really interesting. So these teams played three times in the regular season. They very rarely played at full health. And honestly, I think these teams are both a lot different at this point in their playoff runs than they were then. But some of those numbers are worth exploring. One that you tweeted earlier today at Arcadi Jr. If you're not following Rohan on Twitter, go ahead and fix that. But the shot tracking data between the two point guards of this series, Trae Young of the Hawks, their best player, and Drew Holiday of the Bucks. And I think this is going to be a crucial matchup in the series, no matter what happens. Like, this might end up defining the series. And you've got the numbers from the regular season on how Trae performed when guarded by Drew, which obviously is, I think, the logical place to start when looking at this series, that side of this matchup.
Yeah. As you said, Trae Young, Atlanta's best player, he's been absolutely dominant during this postseason run. And he's really, like, if we're talking about players proving themselves, Trae Young is checking all of the boxes. Like, I'm glad you brought up earlier, given the slander is mostly joking. I mean, it's correct slander. Don't get me wrong on that. But it's like, it's a joke.
Yeah.
The Atlanta Hawks are not a joke. They're not a joke whatsoever. Trae Young is a bona fide star in this league now. He is proving time and time again against any opponent that he belongs in these conversations of the best point guards in the league. He has answered every question. Oh, he's too small to be in the playoffs. Oh, he's too, like, he hunts assists. He's too much of a regular season player in terms of drawing fouls to really matter in these situations. No, no, that's not true anymore. The thing is, the Bucks employ or have on their roster, same thing, I guess, if you're looking at it from a business.
They'll be employing him for quite a while, barring a roster, a sizable trade. But
yes, they have probably the best point guard defender in the NBA on their roster, and Drew Holiday. Now, given if you listen to any of the podcasts during this postseason run, you will have known that we are very critical of Drew Holiday's run so far in the postseason. It's been very Eric Bledsoe-esque is too far, I feel. We've talked about that. But there is something up with Drew Holiday, offensively at least. Defensively, he's all right. He's all right. Yeah. it's not his best. It's not Pete Drew Holiday, but it's not like bad. So the stat you were alluding to earlier, when Trae Young was defended by Drew Holiday during the regular season, again, two matchups, actually, Trae Young has shot a grand total of 0% from the field, has drawn zero fouls, has committed 5 turnovers and 5 assists. So a 1 assist to turnover ratio. Drew has put Trae in absolute hell prison. Shout out to Lance.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, and that makes sense intuitively. I mean, not entirely because Trae is so good, but Drew is super physical, right? Like he's imposing. And I think Trae is, his presence may be imposing, but physically not exactly. So that is the kind of, just looking at, you know, body type here, like Drew is so much bigger. He should be able to prevent Trae from comfortably getting to his spots. And he's a good enough defender. At least he has been in the regular season to do that without fouling. So certainly we don't expect Trae to shoot 0% when guarded by Chris Middleton, or excuse me, by Drew Holiday. But I do think that's where you can start to really make it hard for Atlanta to win this series, is if Drew can just make it tough for him to score efficiently. And I mean, it's funny, they matched near like a bottom 10 performance, I think, in a closeout game or something, Drew and Trae, with their shooting in their respective game sevens. And obviously both teams still won. Trae was creating more for his teammates. Drew got his slack picked up by Giannis mostly, and also Chris and a bunch of role players. But, you know, we've seen Trae be limited in efficiency in this postseason already, and it doesn't kill the Hawks. He can still create for others, and there's other dangerous scorers on the roster. But I certainly think that's a battle that's going to be, I think, the first one you notice, just because the ball is going to be in especially Trae's hands a lot. And I think it's going to dictate a lot of the series, and how well can, we're going to look at it from the Bucks perspective, can Drew do defending Trae? And I think, you know, if you're the Bucks, you have a series worth of proof that if you really need to, you can go into a fully defensive rotation, that you don't put out any bad defenders. And I don't think they're going to do that against Atlanta, at least not to start. But I do think this is a team that does not have anyone as scary as Kevin Durant. You can afford to at least try Forbes and Portis. But if the Bucks have to, and I think certainly to close games for sure, they're going to offer no weak points. So then if Drew is able to limit Trae, I think you're really going to see the other players. It's not going to be easy for anyone else to step up in this game. I don't think Bogdan Bogdanovic, we'll see how he looks. He's dealing with some knee issues. I don't think he'll be as open as he was in that fourth quarter in the regular season where he torched Milwaukee. Hopefully not, at least.
Hopefully is the key word here. You don't know what to expect from this Milwaukee team coming out of that Brooklyn series. My goodness. My goodness. I'm so glad that series is over, by the way. I feel like a weight's been lifted. But yeah, you're right. Also to do with Trae Young, like he hasn't dealt with a guy at the level of Drew Holiday, even in this postseason. Like if you look at that Knicks series, his defenders are like Elfrid Payton, Derrick Rose.
Derrick Rose was the big one. I actually want to talk about Derrick Rose. He did deal with some Ben Simmons, so that's a great defender. But I think on the other end is where he hasn't dealt with anyone. And I think we've seen that can have a real impact on how good you are offensively if you're just getting, you know, demolished defensively and really put through the ringer. And I think that's where I actually – early on, it's almost going to be more important for Drew to shine offensively. And he's got to attack that Trae Young matchup. And they might try to hide Trae somewhere else. We'll see who the Bucks start. We'll get into that later. But whether it's Drew or Chris, the Bucks need to seek out Trae Young through screens and actions and everything else. And if he's defending Drew straight up to start, then certainly through that. But you look at that Knicks series that you alluded to. Payton doesn't play very much. Derrick Rose scores 97 points in 5 games. Averages 19.4 points and 5 assists per game, shoots 47% from the field, 47% from deep. He annihilated the Hawks. Like the only reason that series even got to five games was because Derrick Rose, like he was their offense. Like Randall was really bad. RJ Barrett and Alec Burks scored 14 each per game. I know Burks had one really good game, I believe, but Rose was consistently their best player. And if 32-year-old Derrick Rose can take advantage of Atlanta's perimeter defense and especially point guard defense, I think Drew has to. Like, if you want to shoot a couple threes here and there, sure, but this is a team where Drew needs to seek out Trae Young and take him to the basket and score over and over and over. And just like, don't let him be able to coast on that end. Cause Trae has to carry a lot of offensive burden, make him carry defensive burden too. I think that is really going to play into your hands as you try and defend this Atlanta team if you're the Bucks.
Yeah, and that's why Atlanta has gotten away with so much of what they've been able to do this postseason. Like, even in against Philly, like, they've been able to play Trae Young and Lou Williams at the same time because they have no one, like, at least Philly, they had no one to attack them.
No.
Like, they couldn't really do that against New York. But against Philly, it was viable, because none of their guards really had any offensive output aside from Seth Curry. So that's where you sort of get into like the, if you're the Bucks, you have to attack that right away. And that really lends itself into the starting lineup conversation, which I guess we can have right now.
Yeah.
I believe that the Bucks shouldn't start small. They should stay big. Mm. They should start Drew, Chris, and either Bobby or PJ along with Giannis and Brooke. They have to, because that gives no spot for Trae Young to hide whatsoever.
But you're arguing against then basically Forbes or Pat.
Yes.
Is it really a hiding spot if he finds Forbes and the Bucks just like run a bunch of dribble handoffs and actions
are
with Forbes?
The thing is, you're assuming they're going to do that, which based on that Brooklyn series, we have no idea if they will or not.
That's fair enough. I do think we saw the Bucks against Miami and late against Brooklyn execute a little bit more of a concentrated offense. I think it's a fair criticism. I also think just like having Trae try to keep up with Forbes is in itself kind of a burden. Like there's no one on the Bucks that I think the biggest case for not starting PJ is I think that's probably the easiest hiding spot.
That's what I was saying. Either Bobby, and it's probably going to have to be Bobby in that situation.
And I can't really see Bud starting Bobby after DMPing him for 3-4 whatever straight games.
I could.
It's possible. I guess. Not quite to kid level of randomness, but we do see some questionable things that really don't
connect. Not even questionable. It's like we've seen in the past, like
out of nowhere.
Yeah. Like Pat Connaughton is a perfect example of this throughout the years. Like he goes from not playing whatsoever to just all of a sudden he's in the rotation.
Elijah,
I guess it's maybe just a Pat Connaughton thing, but
yeah, it might end up. It could apply to Bob. We did see the one time non-PJ started post Dante. It was Pat Connaughton. So we will see. It's going to be interesting. It wouldn't shock me if they just stuck with PJ. I think I would prefer a different look, but I like your idea of not giving Trae a place to hide. I think wherever they try to hide him, the Bucks need to make it as painful as possible. So
they need to go back to the mindset they had during the Miami series,
yeah,
which is if you have poor defenders on the court, you just need to go attack, attack, attack. Like Brooklyn in this situation, Brooklyn was such a weird matchup and such a counter to what they did against Miami, is because ever since, like, it's weird, like Kyrie and Harden injuries sort of like played against Milwaukee and sort of their defensive schemes, because when the players they started in their place, they just went bigger. And yeah. Milwaukee's like, oh, we can't attack guards anymore. With Atlanta, you can do that again. And that's why they need to get back into that mindset. And that's good because they already have that game plan.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, Portis starting, to me, I don't know if I love it. I think I just like Portis as a bench player more. I think he has more to offer there. And I think I would prefer to do that, especially if you're looking at Atlanta, assuming like Gallo is one of their primary bench players. Like that seems like a matchup where if Portis is getting picked up by Gallo and those scant bench minutes, like that should be a point where the Bucks can take advantage of that. I mean, the Hawks can try on the other end, but I'd pick Portis to hold up defensively more than Gallinari. This Hawks team is just so small. I think we'll just talk about size in general a little bit more later, but I think I would like to see Forbes first. I do think there's less risk of him getting played off the floor, although I don't know. Maybe there's not. I guess where would you hide Forbes on? I guess actually early, you know, make Bogdanović prove he's good to go. Start him on Bogdanović. Is the fifth starter going to start on Bogdanović no matter what? Almost.
I don't think so. I think Chris takes the Bogdanovich matchup because he has in these previous series. Like, he's taken the Duncan Robinson matchup. He's taken the Joe Harris matchup.
But wouldn't that be Herter more than Bogdanovich?
They use Bogdanovich a little bit, I guess, because he's hurt now. And I guess it's weird. Atlanta has like two of these guys you really need to worry about.
Yeah.
But the bigger threat and the biggest upside potential for Atlanta is Bogdanovich because he is the better player. So you just have to assume that he's ready to go in that sense, because you can't take that risk. And that plays into the argument of like what we were talking about with Brooklyn. You can't let the axillary players get into a rhythm early.
Yeah.
If you force them to like prove themselves, they could be ready to go, and then you're already in the hole.
The more I look at this, the more I wonder if starting PJ actually is the right move. Because I think you could just do so much defensively if Drew guards Trey, PJ and Chris guard Bogdanovich and Herter, Giannis on Collins and Lopez on Capella. Like, that just to me, I just feel so comfortable with every single one of those matchups for Milwaukee. And I just think
comfortable with PJ on Herter?
Yeah, definitely. Do you not? He checked KD.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I mean those are very
KD, I feel okay with
them. They're very different players.
Yeah. KD's better.
Yes, but KD is more of a standstill guy.
I mean, he was driving a lot, I thought, especially later.
I know, but when he catches the ball, he just like sizes up. And you don't need to worry about constant motion.
I suppose.
Like, Herter's going to be running around all over the place.
That's why I want Chris on Herter and PJ on Bogdanovich.
That's the thing. Like, they're both going to do that.
I think Herter does it more, but I haven't watched a ton of Hawks tape.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think PJ.
We'll see. We'll see. Bogdanovich, again, he's going to be limited. So we'll see. Like, I doubt he's going to be running around that much. Like, you're right. Probably Herter's going to take on more of that role.
So who would you – so if it's Portis, where would you put Portis? Would you put Giannis on one of the wings? And then, I don't know, if like Giannis on Herter and Portis on Collins? Oh, I don't know if I like that much either.
Yeah, that's fair, honestly.
So that's why
maybe
I think
PJ is the way to go.
PJ, Pat, or Forbes. I mean, you could try Forbes and just – again, it'd be like you'd basically be daring Atlanta and Bogdan himself – to prove that he's ready to exploit a matchup, which he didn't look great in game seven. He sat for the most of the end of the game, if I recall correctly. So I do think that's probably where you put the defender you feel the weakest about hanging with these options. The other thing too is like, you could always, if you felt better about Giannis on Herter / Bogdanovich, you could try that and then put like PJ on one of Collins or Capella, probably Collins. I think that's fine. Yeah. I don't feel terrible about that. Like if they want to try and post up John Collins on PJ all day, I think you almost welcome that because you're going to have Brooke in the vicinity to help.
It's going to be the Karl Anthony Towns against DeMarcus Cousins meme.
That too. Also that. I don't think he's going to move him that much, but like Brooke is going to be able to help as long as Capella's out there. And Giannis will probably find himself helping, even if he shouldn't, knowing the way Giannis defends as a help defender a lot of the time. So I do wonder how much we see of that. I mean, it's, I think, funny to say, like, oh, the Bucks don't always adjust into these crazy things, but like their game one alignment against Brooklyn was Giannis on Kyrie. So I don't think we should assume that Giannis will always guard Collins if the Bucks start one of PJ or Portis.
Yeah, and they move to Giannis on Harden. Like, yeah. These things happen.
Yeah, so I almost wonder if that's going to be the play, if it's PJ or unlikely or Portis. I don't think you could stick Forbes on Capella Collins.
This is where you really miss Dante.
Yeah, I mean, it's so obvious if Dante is playing. Like, it's very seamless.
Get well soon. Get well soon.
Should we
question mark?
Not starting. I think he'll play a little
Elijah
bit.
Elijah Bryant?
4 minutes. Pat is the guy we have to consider.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, Pat starting and putting him on Bogdanovich would work pretty well, given that Bogdanovich
is... See, that's the thing. You mentioned that fourth quarter in the third Atlanta matchup. Guess who was on Bogdanovich?
Pat
Connaughton.
Yeah. So maybe that's not the best idea.
Yeah, that's why I'm sort of leaning away from that. Because Pat, as good as he's played, especially in Brooklyn, like... he had some monster games. He still has his deficiencies defensively.
Yeah.
You can like size him up, size him down. It's fine. Like he is versatile on the defensive end, but if you're just talking about sticking with a guy, it's not his strong suit.
Yeah. Almost. He might even be better on like aligning with bench players. Like almost wonder if he would be better guarding Gallinari than a Bogdanovich or someone like that.
I would not put Pat on Gallinari.
Why not?
Because Gallinari is just going to post him up and take fadeaway.
But isn't that what you want, though?
Yes.
A Gallo fadeaway Pat losing Bogdanovich around a screen or something?
I feel like a Gallinari post-up is more efficient.
Than a Bogdanovich catch and shoot three?
Okay, maybe not. Maybe not that.
That's a tough number, man. Post-ups are not that efficient. That's what I mean. Like, if you can go to guy into posting up in general, unless it's like an Embiid or Jokic type player, it's usually a good move unless it's a wild mismatch.
Fair. But like, I don't know. Gallo's still a very, very capable offensive player.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he is shooting 41% from the field, but 39% from deep in these playoffs so far. So kind of a mix. It's a weird roster for Atlanta. And that's why we're like going around in circles trying to figure out who should start and who should not.
Because it feels like their starters should be there, or their bench players should be their starters, but they're not.
Yeah, like the Gallo, Lou Williams, Okongwu, Tony Snell. We might see some Tony Snell.
Tony Snell revenge series. Everyone's talking about Milwaukee and Mike Budenholzer's revenge series. No, it's the Tony Snell revenge.
He's got to put up a memorial, all zeros, 11 minutes played game in honor of his past work with the Bucks. I think that would be.
I think in honor of his past postseason work with Milwaukee, he just shouldn't play.
That also might happen. Although the Hawks are pretty banged up without Hunter and Cam Reddish and DeAndre Hunter for a while. Hunter is out
for the postseason, confirmed.
Oh, okay.
He had surgery on his torn meniscus.
That's right.
Get well soon. And Cam Reddish is rehabbing from an Achilles injury, and there's no real timetable.
So kind of the Kawhi situation?
I'm not sure. But like he's ramping up practice. It says there was a non-surgical procedure done, which is just confusing.
Massaged it or what?
I have no idea, honestly. Like this might did. I don't know if any Philly medical staff traveled to Atlanta or something. Like I don't know what's going on there. But apparently he is ramping up practice a little bit. But there is no major news on Cam Reddish.
I can't believe this team started Solomon Hill in 3 playoff games.
I think they might have to do it.
To do what?
Size.
He's not that big.
But like, he's bigger than some of the guys they are starting.
See, this is the thing, and this is why I'm almost thinking it might be better to start PJ. Is I think sometimes there's just a desire to like fit a certain idea of a lineup or idea of skills that you go away from like your better players. I think that's something that Milwaukee thankfully didn't do late in the Brooklyn series, because we all saw how great Giannis at the five was, but the Bucks, like Brooke Lopez was just way too good to not play him. And I think at a certain level, Bud was like, listen, PJ Giannis Brooke is not an ideal front court for most reasons, but we can't just not play Brooke. Like if we're going to sit Brooke for a long time, we're playing someone who's not going to help the team as much. So that's what we have to do. I think anytime you're arguing why Solomon Hill should play over Herter or whoever it is, I think you're losing the plot on what is actually helpful. The guy has scored 1.3 points per game in 10 minutes per game, shooting 23-23-50 splits right now. It's not good. If he every minute he plays, the Bucks need to win that minute by a lot. Because again, like what size? What is he guarding Giannis?
It's similar to the Dwayne Dedman situation.
It's worse than that. Dwayne Dedman is a real NBA. Solomon Hill is like, come on. Solomon Grundy, I think, could give you more production from the bench. Like Solomon Hill, what 23-23-50 in 10 games? Or excuse, 9 games, 10 minutes per game? I don't know, man. Like, that's the thing. And I think, I guess let's do our final verdict on who we think is going to start for the Bucks. And we can talk a little bit about for the Hawks as well. But I think it's actually going to be PJ, because I think the Bucks saw like the benefit of just not giving yourself a weak link on defense to start and end the game. And I think it worked against Brooklyn. And I think the fact that they stuck with it even after Brooklyn started to lose stars kind of shows you that. And I guess they kind of had to stick with it because obviously PJ was the starter in question. They used him on Durant so much. But I do think like that lineup just showed you some things and showed you that they could play defense well enough that even if the offense suffers, it doesn't hurt you that much. And I do think the Bucks want to continue winning games off defense. So I'm going to go with PJ to start and just try to figure out how you can use those great defenders to stymie the Hawks' offense.
Yeah, I think you might have convinced me here. I think it has to be PJ. Bobby will definitely have a role in this
series. I think Bobby and Forbes both will play more than they played in the last series. I think you can use them more against this team, but I also don't think that means they have to start or close games for sure.
Yes, this is just what happens when you go against a team who's elite at the guard position and not at the alien position.
Yeah, not guarding. You know, that's a fun thing to think about. The Bucks won't see anyone as threatening as they did in the last series, who they beat already. Like, it's a comforting thing to think about. Like, I do think part of the reason that Forbes and eventually Portis just didn't play is, sure, Brooklyn has a lot of weapons in general, but, I mean, those guys stopped playing after Forbes played, but just barely. After Kyrie was out and after Harden was a shell of himself. Like, I think it was mostly just KD. The Bucks were like, we're not going to ever let Forbes or Portis be on KD. And as much as I think that Portis should have been given a shot in some of the Pat minutes, although Pat played very well in game 7, of course, but like, I get it, especially with Forbes. Like, that is just such a horrible, horrible mismatch that I do understand. And although there's still going to be mismatches in this series, you know, at least Forbes is like the same size.
It's not as threatening. No one is as threatening on the Hawks as Kevin Durant. Like, that's not a slight to the Hawks. Like, we already talked about it on the last pod. Like, KD's the best player on the planet.
Yeah, like, he has been this whole playoff run. That's for damn sure.
It's just, there's no one as threatening as him.
No.
It's just a fact.
No, and that's why, I think certainly the Forbes and Portis should play more, should give that bench punch that they did in the Miami series again. I don't think that means you start them, though. I do like relying on the defense, because at the end of the day, that's what got them through the Brooklyn series. I think that teams have identities, and I think the Bucks as a great defensive team, that's a good identity to rest your head on.
Isn't it funny that they're going – this is a really dichotomous matchup, because it's like a defense-first team versus an offense-first team.
Yeah.
Sort of like a battle of the wills.
Versus almost an offense-only team. I mean, my first question I wrote down about this was, who guards Giannis? And the second question I wrote down was, who guards anybody? Like, this is not a team. I mean, Clint Capella is a really good defender, and I think he's going to be very important, and we'll talk about him. But, like, who else?
Let's start at the top. Let's start with Drew. He has not been, again, he hasn't been his best offensively.
Wait, quickly. Okay. Who do we think Atlanta starts? I think they roll with her.
Oh, yeah.
Because it worked.
Yeah, they kind of have to go with
that. I think that's going to – I mean, Solomon Hill – oh, my God. Solomon Hill played 5 minutes in that game seven. He honored his teammate. He did the Tony Snell. Nothing. Five full minutes. Nothing. Five – is that 5 trillion? Is that what they call it?
Yep.
Yeah. He. That's an impressive one. Exactly 5 minutes, according to B-Ball Ref. But, yeah, I think it's Herder as well. So we're rolling with, for now, I think we're more confident in Atlanta's group, but – Trae Young, Kevin Herter, Bogdan Bogdanovich, John Collins, Clint Capella, and the Bucks side is Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, PJ Tucker, Giannis, and Brooke Lopez.
Yes. Okay. Now, let's start at the top. Drew Holiday, yes. Again, sucked offensively so far, to put it lightly.
Yes.
Just not great. He did come up clutch in that fourth quarter, Game 7. Also, I cannot believe that Game 7 even happened. Are you still recovering from that?
The pod tweet from the Eurostep account today on Monday was like, it wasn't a hallucination. It really happened. I worded the tweet because I have to keep reminding myself that really, it feels like one of those things that, like, remember when I thought I had a fever dream that the Bucks signed somebody to a camp contract and it like thought it was Stauskas, but it was somebody else or whatever. Like, it feels like that. And I'm like, there's no way that actually happened.
No, right? It was
like,
Mario Hezonja.
Hezonja, and I thought it was Stauskas or whatever the hell it was.
No. They signed Nick Stauskas to a camp deal. Thought it was Hezonja. Okay.
Sure. A huge difference made if it was one or the other. But yeah, it was like that, though, where I'm thinking back, like, they really signed Hezonja? Did they really beat KD in Brooklyn in Game 7? Like, what a series. Go listen to the last pod if you haven't already. It's our most listened podcast by a mile. And if you're new, thank you for tuning in for the first or probably second time. Please subscribe.
Hopefully it's not the last.
Yeah. Hang around. We have more good content to come as this Bucks run continues. And after.
And just in general.
Yeah. No matter how it ends, we're going to keep bringing the content. But
for sure.
Drew Holiday, not great on offense again.
Not great. He should be able to get into a rhythm in this series, considering that the guy who's going to be on him is Trae Young.
But do we think
potentially?
So?
Yeah. Potentially. I think you kind of have to.
Yeah,
the size mismatch between PJ Tucker and Trae is just like, you're going to get a layup every single possession. Like, you don't have to work for it. Like, he won't see Trae Young if he's just looking straight on. You just put up a layup. Like, there's nothing you can do about that. You have to put Trae Young on Drew Holiday, realistically, unless you want to put him on Chris.
No, I really think, like, they might try on PJ.
I mean, they'll try it for sure. And the Bucks, like, if they do that, they have to take advantage of it.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, and I do think, you know, PJ's comments from the last series were basically like, you get what you get on offense when I'm guarding Kevin Durant. He doesn't have to guard Kevin Durant anymore. So I think it's a pretty fair trade-off. I think if you're going to involve PJ in more actions and whatever, I guess pick and pops, I could see him doing that a little bit maybe. I guess we'll see exactly how they want to use it.
Weird. We haven't really seen PJ as a screener that much in his time in Milwaukee at all. He's literally just been planted in the corner.
I think that's by design. He's like, listen, I'm not trying to do all that. Like, I'm using a lot of energy on the other end, guys. I also think, like, if he's in corner and then maybe, like, fading to dunker spot on some possessions, because that's where we've seen him make a huge impact on the offensive glass against a much bigger Nets team. If Trae is his cover and Trae is the nearest guy, like, he's going to have a lot of rebound opportunities if he's around the glass on Bucks misses. And I think that's...
And even if you put him in the corner, he can literally just shoot over him. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I do think – I do want to see him do a little bit more if they do stick Trae on him, though. You have to make Trae work. Even if he just sets a half-hearted screen and pop, like, at least get Trae in these actions.
Like, he doesn't even have to, like, set a hard screen or anything. He just has to stand there. Like, I don't think everyone's fully understanding the size discrepancy between these two players. Like, my goodness. Like, what is Trae Young? 6'1", 180? And you go against – 250 PJ Tucker? Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
PJ Tucker could eat Trae Young.
Yeah, when you put it that way. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, but assuming that Trae does start on Drew,
yes.
Drew just has to.
You have to. It's put up or shut up time for Drew Holiday, realistically.
I want to see so little three-pointers. If that's every single time, whether Trae starts on Drew or they work to get Trae on Drew, like almost zero. Just because you the threes are going to be there. Trae is not going to lock you up from at the line, but the shots at the rim are going to be there too. And I think, you know, hopefully Drew draws some confidence from the end of game seven. Hopefully the confidence drawn is not some threes fell, I need to keep shooting threes. No, like get to the basket. I think that was my thing last series against Brooklyn. And when the Bucks did it, they won games. I think that's going to be against Atlanta too. I think the Bucks shooters, there's going to be more opportunity just to play shooters. But I do think getting to the rim, whoever's Trae is guarding should be trying to go to the rim every time. If nothing else, get some fouls on the guy.
Yeah, for sure. We also need to take into account, like, we just made the same argument for PJ Tucker. Like, Drew Holiday is going to be tasked with a lot on the defensive end, more than he was in the Brooklyn series. Well, at times he was guarding Kevin Durant, so
yeah,
we'll see. But the majority of the time, he was on, like, a hobbled James Harden.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Drew Holiday doesn't make PJ Tucker money and doesn't play a PJ Tucker role. Like,
he's still a human being.
Yeah, but when you're brought in as a role player to specifically basically do one thing, it's different expectations. I mean, a two-way point guard is expected to play both ways.
Fair.
He doesn't need to score 30, but he needs to take Trae Young to the paint repeatedly. Like, it just has to happen in this series.
He needs to go, like, this is the perfect matchup for him to replicate his series that he had against the Blazers.
Yeah, against Dame and CJ,
Yeah, because in the Miami series, there wasn't that sort of angle for him. Definitely not against Brooklyn as soon as Kyrie and Harden went down. This is the time. If you're going to say, like, oh, that's me, this is the series to do it. And you have plenty of positive regression headed your way if you actually, you know, are able to let it happen. But yeah, it just defensively for Atlanta, it just starts with Trae Young. You have to hunt Trae Young every single possession. And even going off of that, like, who's guarding Chris Middleton? Bogdan? Yeah,
that's the question. It Bogdan on a bad knee or Herder?
Herder's probably their best option, realistically.
Is he 6'6 or 6'7? I think he's 6'7. But
I can,
like,
check really quick.
Is he not, like, does he not have a fairly similar body type to Duncan Robinson, who...
Yeah, he's 6'7.
Like, is Duncan Robinson not also 6'7? I think he is. I think they're, like, physically
they're all
very
6'7.
Similar
and
players.
Even, like, Kevin Herter is, like, 20 pounds lighter than Duncan Robinson as
we
well.
We saw how Chris approached Duncan Robinson in that series. Like, oh, you're covering me? I am going to shoot threes directly in your eyeball or post you up and take you to the rack and shoot open jumpers when I fade away over the top of you every single time. Like, you can be roughly Chris's height and still not really be able to do anything about Chris's mid-range game and back.
You can be taller than Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I think whichever of those two guys takes on Chris, like, he might end up being – well, I guess not. He might end up being the most important Buck offensively just because the Hawks don't really have anyone who you look at and go, like, oh, this player is going to hamper Chris's ability to play. And we all know Chris's game. Like, let me get back to the basket and back you down and fade away over either shoulder. Let me shoot a three in your eyeball, drive once a year. Like, what defender on the Hawks is going to be able to do to stop Chris Middleton from doing those things very comfortably? Like, as important as Drew is, and I think he does need to take advantage of Trae Young whenever possible, Chris should have comfortable shots pretty much all day.
For sure. Like, we'll get to it. This entire team should, realistically.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, it helps. Like, we've all seen the splits by now of Chris Middleton being so much more effective at home. The Bucks have home court advantage again in the playoffs, thanks to the process failing. Not for the rest of the playoffs, just for this series. They won't in the finals. But still... And you take everything you can get. The Bucks, if a lot of things go wrong and this series goes long, at the end of the day, the Bucks just have to win home games, and they'll be able to hold on and go to the finals. So a comforting thought, even as we look at some of the tough matchups for Milwaukee. But as we're talking about, Atlanta has plenty of hard ones too. Basically, no matter who the Bucks start as the fifth guy, there's only going to be one like safe place to hide someone, because you know you could argue Brook Lopez, and teams have used Brook as that before, but the Hawks are going to play Capella. They have to play Capella. We'll get into Capella specifically. Capella has to guard Lopez or Giannis, one or the other. And then Collins is obviously going to start as well. So he's going to be on the other Bucks big, you'd have to assume. So, like, I don't think there's really any chance that Trey ends up guarding Lopez, because then you have to put Collins on one of, like, Chris or Drew or something, and that's not very good at all. Like,
and also, you're putting Trey Young on Brooke Lopez. Like, yeah, my goodness.
I think the Bucks would get to the post pretty quickly.
If PJ Tucker can eat Trey Young, Brook Lopez could eat like three.
Could have seconds and thirds. And I think one positive note, as I'm trying to pull up the data here, and it's not doing it quickly, but I do think a lot of Drew Holiday's difficulties, a lot of it, like, sure, he didn't play that well by his standards. I think a lot of it was just none of his threes fell, and he kept taking threes. Like, his two-point percentage, I believe, was not ludicrously lower than usual against Brooklyn. I haven't been able to pull up just 2-point percentage at this point, because everyone just wants to show you field goal and three, which, you know, we've talked about this before, but the woke 50-40-90, use 2-point percentage. It's more illuminating. Field goal percentage doesn't make sense anymore. Players take too many threes. I digress. But so that's a positive thing for Drew. He should be able to continue to score at the basket at a high rate, maybe even higher if Trey does end up being the guy. But so we talked about hiding someone on PJ. We talked about who's going to guard Chris. No good options. I mean, honestly, when healthy, Bogdan is probably a better option than Herter, but yeah, Neither are good. I don't feel good
about
that.
They're probably going to stick Bogdan on
PJ, or PJ, the fifth starter.
Yeah, because he's just like Bogdan is, he's smaller than Herter, but he's like a better defender by just reputation, I guess, and also play. But Bogdan, it's just, you have to see how he feels on that knee.
Yeah.
Because he's just like you mentioned, he wasn't playing near the end of that game 7 against Philly. Like, it's just, it's going to be tough. You have to see how he feels coming into this series and do it based on that. I think they're going to stick him on PJ just so they don't have to run him around so much.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Which, so that leaves Herter for Middleton, we just talked about.
The flip side of that means you get Trey on one of your good, very good offensive players, which is obviously a win for the Bucks. And again, they just need to, we're going to say it a million times every single post game. I'm sure we'll say they could do it more, but got to exploit that matchup wherever.
Weaponize
your size. So let's talk about size. Let's talk about Giannis. But before we get
into this, let's talk about their best player.
Yeah, every single pod.
I said Pat Connaughton last.
That was so funny. We haven't talked about someone yet that we should, Rohan. Who is it? Pat? No, Giannis. It was a great pod. But the Hawks, tiny. No one, and this is all just listed data, which this is supposed to be accurate now. I'm not sure if B-Ball Ref has updated everything. I'm pulling from B-Ball Ref. But no one listed taller than 6'10". Only three guys who are actually going to play listed taller than 6'8". And that is Collins, Capella, and I forget who the third guy might be. Is it just two? No, I thought there was a third one. Hold on.
Nope.
Oh, Gallo.
Oh, okay.
Gallo's listed as 6'10".
Okay, in their rotation. Gotcha.
No, Gallo is listed as 6'10". So the three guys taller than 6'8 who actually play are John Collins, Clint Capella, and Danilo Gallinari. So even their big guys, like Capella's a good defender. The other two, not
very
so much.
Good defender.
Very good defender. I think he got DPOY votes, or he should have, or whatever. But the other two guys, though, not so much. Gallo and John Collins, not exactly known as defensive stalwarts. So the Hawks have literally one guy who is both A, big, and B, a good defender for that size. So I think that is really going to be huge in this series. You know, we ask questions, can Lopez stay on the floor against Brooklyn? He was able to. I think he certainly needs to stay on the floor against Atlanta. And I think this is somewhere where the Bucks can continue to punish the opposition, is like the glass and rebounding and the individual task with guarding Giannis, who certainly is going to be smaller than Giannis by default, because they don't have any options who are bigger than Giannis.
Yeah, for sure. Like Brook Lopez, what he's struggled with theoretically, I'll say, struggled with in past postseason matchups, which, by the way, that narrative needs to be eliminated immediately.
They usually win his minutes.
Yeah. When has he ever gotten played off the floor in the playoffs as a member of the Milwaukee Bucks? He hasn't.
No.
And
he's
even
more,
if he's
more adaptable than people think.
Yes. And if they do take him off the floor, it's because Giannis the five is just broken.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%. It's not his fault. It's not a detriment to Brooke. Like, it's just like, oh, they can do something else too. Brooke has been incredible as a playoff performer, just time and time again. That narrative needs to end immediately.
No, totally agree. Yes, totally agree.
Brooke Lopez, the situations where he might face trouble but hasn't is with like, oh, a stretch big that you can just pick and pop with. Clint Capella is not a pick and pop big. That's putting it nicely. Great defender, Clint Capella. Offensively, you have to worry about vertical spacing, realistically. Yeah. Like, he's smaller than Brooke.
He is scoring 10 points per game this postseason on incredible efficiency, nearly 61%. He literally, he finishes pick and rolls at the rim that are open. Like, that's the Clint Capella shot diet. Zero attempted threes. Also, quietly, and this is something that could end up mattering a little bit, awful from free throw this postseason. 44% from free throw is Clint Capella. And weirdly, Bogdan Bogdanovich, 55.6%, but he's barely taken any. So that might just be a sample size. Like, he's in the line less than one time a game. Like, the Hawks really, outside of Trey, don't get to the free throw line very often. The next most per game is Gallo at 3.1. Hunter's at 3.2, but he's not going to play anymore. So that's an interesting thing too. So most of the guys the Bucks send to the line, they should feel good about those guys going to the line, especially Capella and Bogdanovich. But yeah, the offensive game for him is like, it's the Clippers DeAndre Jordan, like lobs, open pick and rolls, some cleanups, like that kind of thing.
Yeah. Like, if Clint Capella is taking like turnaround hooks or like,
you feel good.
Baseline jumpers.
You feel really good.
You're fine. Like, yeah. That's a win for Milwaukee. So you don't have to worry about Brooke being played off the floor in these situations, realistically, or hampered, I'll say that. So now we get into who defends Giannis. And that's where Capella fits in, because Capella will be the guy who defends Giannis. And he's actually done a pretty decent job at it in years past, and especially this season. Again, according to this wonky NBA tracking data, Clint Capella has, when he's Giannis' primary defender, Giannis is 4 of 13 from the field and drawn one foul. Like, that's not great. That's probably the best that any player can realistically do against Giannis. So Clint Capella is going to be really, really important for Atlanta.
Yeah. So here's a stat. This is just not just primary matchup, but just whenever Capella was on the floor. So Giannis versus the Hawks with Capella on, 10 for 14 in the restricted area, which is quite good. It's like 70%. But as you pointed out with your tracking data, a lot of those shots are coming when he's able to get loose from Capella for whatever reason. He's not necessarily just like going through him every single time, but still he's able to get to the rim and finish shots at a higher rate even for him. It's nothing though compared to what he's done in the restricted area when Capella hasn't played this season. Giannis versus the Hawks with Capella off, 12 for 12 in the restricted area. Nobody else who's played has been able to offer resistance. Like, when Giannis has gotten to the paint with Capella off the floor, he's literally scored like every single time. So he's good. He can finish against Capella when he's on the court, at least. When Capella's off, like in any minutes when Giannis is on and Capella's off, you've got to just be working to get him to the paint as quickly as possible, because the next up center, their only other center who really plays, is Onyeka Okongwu, a rookie who is listed at 6'8", a good defensive player. There's not many 6'8 defensive players who are going to hang with Giannis, especially rookies. That, and I know the tracking data isn't great for Giannis there, but still, the overall Giannis statistics against the Hawks without Capella leads you to believe that anybody else is out there, he's feeling exceptionally comfortable at the rim.
Yeah, and especially like their other big guy is Gallinari.
Again, like, just not a defender.
No, not at all. Not even in the slightest. Like, this is what I was talking about. This team is like, we're going to outscore you. That's their game plan. Like, because they're not going to offer any resistance to any of Milwaukee's players on the defensive end, realistically. Like, if you look at what Embiid did against the Hawks, like, my goodness, Joel Embiid on a torn meniscus just absolutely torched them. It's just like any sort of size against Atlanta just doesn't work. It just doesn't. Like, what are these points that he's putting up in this Atlanta series? 39, 40, 27, 17. And that's because he went 4-for-20 from the field. 37, 22, 31. This is on inefficient shooting.
With Ben Simmons on the court next to
yes.
him.
With bad spacing, with Ben Simmons. Yeah, that those two are the same thing. That's just it. It's just like size versus Atlanta, and he just could do whatever he wanted. And this is the Bucks.
Yeah.
Not like Embiid.
Size is their
thing. This isn't Philly. This is Milwaukee.
This is a real team. Do you know who's second on the Hawks in blocks? Capella's obviously first. And in the playoffs.
Ooh.
Total blocks.
Ooh, this is fun. I don't know the answer to this. I'm going to guess Solomon Hill.
Kevin Huerter.
Oh my God.
He actually somehow has 11 blocks, which is more than any Buck besides Giannis or besides Lopez. It's ridiculous how many blocks he has, but nobody else has more than 9. Collins and Okongwu both have 9. Then Bogdanović, 4. Gallo and Hunter, 3. And then Solomon Hill and Tony Snell both have 1. So yeah, just outside of Kevin Huerter, somehow not a ton of blocked shots for Atlanta thus far. It's going to be. Like, this just has to be another series where Giannis just goes off. And I know outside of game 2, like, he was quite good against Brooklyn the whole time. But, like, outside of – I guess this isn't fair, but I was going to say outside of Capella, does anyone on the Hawks – is it, would anyone on the Hawks be better than Blake? But I guess Blake was the only really guy that Brooklyn had either, so.
Yeah, realistically. It's just like, are the Bucks going to beat themselves in the series?
Yeah, like they're like, I think you should just try to put whoever Trey is guarding in a pick and roll with Giannis every time.
Yeah. You just have, like I said earlier, you have to treat it like it's the Miami series again. Because they're the more I think about it and the more we talk about it, they play in similar fashions. Like Trey Young is against Milwaukee's defense is going to eat on floaters.
Yeah.
Like that's what killed Milwaukee against Miami last season in the bubble, Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, by the way, just floaters killed them. That didn't happen this series against Miami like 2 years ago, whatever it feels like now. Is the same going to hold for this team? Like, is Brooke going to do what he did against Miami and show higher, take away that floater, force him to drive? Like, is that going to happen? We'll see. Is Milwaukee actually going to adjust to this or just like go back to what they did against Brooklyn? Or are they going to fall back on that Miami game plan that really, really made them look dominant? That's the question.
Yeah, no, it's going to be fascinating. I think there are certainly...
Because Milwaukee's favored in the series by a lot. And they should be
the championship now.
Yes, they should be, realistically.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of are they going to beat themselves? Because they're the toughest challenge left.
That's meta, but I don't disagree with you at all. I do think that there's opportunities here. And also, just to close out this conversation, I think Capella is going to be on Giannis. I think this is one where the regular season numbers are one thing. I do think this is going to be quite the challenge for Clint Capella. And I think it's going to be... It's not at all like guarding Embiid, right? Like guarding Embiid, you pretty much, I mean, you have to go out to 3 now a little bit, but you're pretty much just setting up in the post and like fighting like hell and trying to stop him from doing that. Like Giannis is going to stretch your range a lot more as a defender. Like you're going to have to check him. If you just sit in the paint for him, that's when you just have to start screen whoever Trey is guarding. Honestly, like put Trey through Giannis screens and make him stay with his man around. That's why, like, if it's Forbes, I think that, like, the honest handoff to Forbes would just eat against this team. So I hope we see that sometimes. But I think Capella won't just leave him. I think he will try to hang with him. And it's just, like, it's such a vertical challenge. over and over and over again for a big man to hang with Giannis over the course of a series. Like, I think there's a reason we've seen the Jay Crowders and like Blake Griffins of the world, who technically now plays center, but clearly is built more like a power forward. Like, it's usually easier for those guys than centers, I think, with the way Giannis moves laterally now and with the playmaking he's added to his game. So I do think it's going to be harder for Capella than it was at any point in the regular season.
Yeah. Yeah. If we've learned anything from this season, this postseason, is that it really is a different game in the playoffs. It really is. And Milwaukee's showing that in more ways than one. We've seen a lot of the negatives, unfortunately, mostly just in the Brooklyn series. That Miami series was fun. but we know how much they can really adapt to the situation at hand for the better. I'll say that.
Yeah.
So this is a different game. Capella is going to have trouble. Collins is going to have a lot of trouble.
I was going to say, we should talk about John Collins having to defend Brook Lopez. So John Collins, 6'9", I think. Got some size. I mean, he's a legit stretch four, but Brook is a very legitimate five. It's going to be fascinating to see if that is how they start, or if they try to start Collins on Giannis. I think would be
that'd be a poor decision. Yeah, that would be bold and every short-lived. Single time that Giannis has been guarded by John Collins, it's ended very well for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Do you have the numbers?
Yeah, this season Giannis is 7 of 8 from the field, 3 shooting fouls.
Yeah,
it's easy. It's very easy.
He's seeing meat against Collins.
Also, respect to John Collins, though. Showing up to the press conference wearing a shirt of him dunking on Embiid. Like, my goodness, that's fire.
The Hawks have become a playoff villain, and they're loving that role. They would love to spoil another.
It's cute. Team
that should beat them. It is cute. It's going to have a lot of time to work on it in Cancun after this series. But, yeah, Collins on Lopez. I think a lot of people are going to ask just to post Brook up a lot. And I think post him up sometimes, but it just screams pick and roll. Like, I think anytime you get a bad, bigger defender, like, don't just let them be. It's like Harden. Like, Harden, oh, Harden's now a good defender because he's good in the post. No, he's just big and he can stand still. And if you post him up, he doesn't have to do anything except be thick and stand still. Like, put Collins in a bunch of pick and rolls too. Like, again, get guys moving. And then it's honestly what you could do if you really wanted to be. It probably wouldn't work. But I was going to say, like, if Giannis is kind of on the other end of the court and you're putting Collins in pick and roll on the other side of the floor, like, it's almost like the old Kawhi isolation. Do you remember this when Kawhi was still on the Spurs? I think Matt Moore at HP Basketball came up with the term. Like, they would just move whoever Kawhi was guarding. Like, the other team would just put him, like, on the weak side away from the action. And just, like, have him sit there so Kawhi couldn't ruin the offense of the other four guys and play 4-on-4 to have success against the Spurs. You could almost try to do that with Capella if he's going to be on Giannis. Like, put Giannis on the other end of the floor a little bit and just dare him to help off and let Giannis get to the rim with no one around. Like, I think there's some real potential there in, like, get to the corner and run a pick and roll with Lopez and Drew or Chris and have Capella just away from the play. Because at that point, two of the other four guys, like, good luck guarding Brook Lopez and one of your two best perimeter players.
Yeah, it's not looking good for Atlanta here.
They should not be able to defend the Bucks at all. And I know we said this about Brooklyn, but I think in retrospect, the Nets had better defenders, at least for the Bucks personnel, than Atlanta does.
Yes, for sure. Brooklyn, like, even
they didn't have the weak link.
Yes, that's a great point there. And even at their most hobbled state, which we did see them, they're still better than Atlanta.
Well, yeah, they have, again, Kevin Durant. Like, the starting point is Kevin Durant, who encapsulates two-way excellence and literally everything. Like, not having to worry about that guy is going to make so many other things easier. Yeah, I agree.
Like, two-way play? Like, that's what matters. That's what we're seeing now. Like, if you want to say, like, oh, two-way play matters, why didn't they get off of the – why did they get past the Knicks and why did they get past the Sixers? Those were one-way teams. The Knicks had no defense and the Sixers had no offense.
Yeah.
They couldn't score and the Knicks couldn't defend. The Bucks can score and defend. That's what sets them apart.
It does remind me of the Miami series in that way of just, like – the Hawks do not have many players who are very dangerous on both ends.
No, they don't. Like
not anymore.
They don't have one.
Yeah, is Bogdanovich the closest? I think he leads them in steals this postseason. I know he's going
to
be
closest
hobbled.
To a two-way player, and it's Bogdan Bogdanovich.
Yeah, like obviously not Trey. Herter, I don't think so. Collins, definitely not. He's going to block a shot here and there, but not a great defender. And then Capella is like so far the other way. He doesn't have no bag, so to speak.
Don't incite those words. But yeah, I think we can make serious predictions now. And I think, unless you had something else on the defensive end.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I do think, you know, the more I think about it, I do think you start with PJ. Forbes might be worth a look though, just because I think if they do try to hide Trey on him, I think you just run him off Giannis dribble handoffs and pick and rolls like over and over and over, and maybe even like inverted pick and rolls. Like we haven't seen that as much from the Bucks, despite Giannis's excellent ball handler efficiency numbers. But like we have seen Forbes screen for him here and there. Like imagine Forbes screening for Giannis's man and Giannis comes around into Trey Young. Like that could be effective. Like there might be some room for Forbes to potentially start. It depends how the Hawks want to defend, but I want to see him or PJ. And I think we're going to see, I predicted before the postseason, Bucks in five, Bucks in seven, Bucks in six, Bucks in six. So I'm just going to stick with Bucks in six. Although I do have a feeling Bucks in five is very much in play here.
Yeah. My last thing, like Bobby Portis, we mentioned this, he's going to see a role in the series for sure. He did not play like at all in the latter half of that Brooklyn series. He's going to see increased minutes because you can afford to do that like against Atlanta, and he brings value. But he's going to see an increased role, Bucks and four.
Wow, Bucks and four, he says. Wow, I did not realize how bad Trae Young's efficiency was this playoffs.
Not great.
33% from deep, 46% from two. He does have 125 assists in 12 games, literally 10.5 a game.
Yes, yeah, the thing nuts. Is the Bucks don't need the help on Trae Young.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I just think their personnel is going to be – they have better point of attack defenders. Like Simmons, the one thing he does struggle with is small guards. Drew, not so much. So
that's his strong suit, actually.
So I do think if you can just trust
Drew, envelops them.
The Bucks can't overhelp. And I think thankfully PJ Tucker's on the roster, who's literally going in post-game press conferences and saying, "Don't help me on Kevin Durant." I think if he's gonna say that about KD, I feel like the team will also feel that way about Drew Holiday on Trae Young. So just gonna go with Bucks.
Drew Holiday will say that. Not just PJ.
Yeah, true. Bucks in for it. You could convince me, but I don't think this Atlanta team is going to go out in a sweep.
It's five or four. I'm leaning four, though, obviously, because I just said that. But it's, I don't know. I respect Atlanta a lot.
Yeah, I do, too. That's why I'm not saying they're going to get swept.
I don't respect them that much. There is a level of respect, unlike I have with Philly or Utah. Yeah. My goodness.
Listen, it's got nothing to do with the – well, I guess it kind of does because now the Suns get to waltz to the finals because they get to play the Clippers without Kawhi. But how on earth do you let Terrence Mann and Reggie Jackson dust you out of the playoffs? What?
Yep. It's okay. They have Rudy Gobert for $47 million.
They're defined. And all I heard from Utah fans was these excuses. Oh, the only point of attack defenders were Mitchell and Conley. They played. What? Yep. Like, you know, who's a good point of attack defender? Kawhi Leonard. No excuses if Kawhi Leonard is out.
You know who was like rivaling Kevin Durant for best player on the planet before
Kawhi
he got hurt?
Leonard.
Kawhi Leonard.
Don't give me any, our point of attack defense suffered because Donovan and Conley were hampered. Kawhi was out. Like, no, this is the playoffs. Like, step up. Rudy Gobert, honestly, the defensive jokes are funny. Their point of attack defense is awful, and it's because their players just aren't good. But 12 points in 40 minutes with Nick Batum as the other center? Are you kidding me? That's why
I want to talk no bag.
That's why I don't trust them in the playoffs, man. If you can't score more than 12 points in 40 minutes with Nick Batum guarding you, like you're letting teams hurt you on the other end because you're just incapable. And that's like, I said this on the pod way back when, but like Wouldn't want him on the Bucks on Vetman. No role for the guy. Just no role. What would he do?
That's fair, honestly. You just take up space.
I don't want him on the court. Ben Simmons. Like, no bag Rudy, no thanks.
Ooh, we've somehow managed to slander a lot of teams.
Well, they should stop losing in the playoffs.
That's true.
Advice from Ty.
Maybe we shouldn't talk about this.
Hey, listen, live in the moment,
Rohan. Let's not count our chickens before they've hatched, okay? This is me saving myself from future. I'm saving you from future slander.
Yeah, I'm going to get it anyway. That's true.
But yeah, this will be a fun series. This will be a less stressful series for sure. You don't think so?
I hope so. I still don't trust the Bucks that much.
It's got to be less stressful, right?
I don't trust the Bucks enough to think it won't be stressful. That's for sure. Maybe less stressful.
Yeah, it won't. Like, I don't know. That last playoff series felt like the finals.
It did. And maybe it'll end up looking like it I think the finals are going to be really hard no matter what. But yeah, this theoretically should be easier. It is an easier matchup. Even the Brooklyn that the Bucks got, this is still easier. But I'm not – it's playoff – it's all business. I'm all business. I'm like Giannis after that dunk I talked about in the Game 7 pod. Like, no mean mug, no celebration, just stone-faced. Got four more wins to get before we're out of the East.
Yeah. They got a – did you see the inside of the locker room celebration? They have, like, the number written on the corner of the whiteboard. Yeah. Just got to tick that down. Yeah. Just got to tick that number down.
We got to go to 7, okay. Then 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Those are all the numbers left.
Thank you. Yeah. For counting with Ty here on the Eurostep. But yeah, those numbers are going to go down by 4 in 4 consecutive games. That's my prediction here. You're saying 5?
I'll stick with 6 because I tweeted it. I believe 5, but I'll
the Bucks. No, the Bucks are never going to win in 6.
That's true. It's just not going to happen. Bucks in 5.
Yeah, I'm doing it's not happening.
I'm doing just my series prediction charity thing, so this is going to cost me $1 if I'm right, but because I tweeted Bucks in 6, but I'll go with Bucks in 5.
Before we wrap this up here, last time you and I spoke, Ty, we did a review. We commented on a 5-star review left on Apple. Let's do that again. Ty, what do you got?
Yeah, so one of these I realized we're just going to have to hold off on one of these for the moment. But Ham Tickler 4-5 reviewed us, 5 stars, which is what we like to see. The headline, solid pod, which is like, okay, that's fine. But the review itself, I like. Refreshingly honest takes on current Bucks issues. Is that not how we bill ourselves? We're just here telling the truth about the Milwaukee Bucks and getting tomatoes thrown at us because of it. So although the headline was not inspiring, I thought the conciseness of the actual review was good. So we're going to shout out Ham Tickler 4-5. So if you want to get your review read on the pod, try to make it funny, maybe a better subject line than Ham Tickler 4-5 came up with. But
solid pod is fine.
It's true. It's solid at worst.
That's good. It's a compliment.
High floor podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Take someone's device if you don't have one or you don't use Apple and drop that review and you might get it read on the pod if it's that 5 stars.
Yeah, for sure. Make sure you do that. Make sure you do it just in general because you like the pod. Make sure you tell all of your family and friends about the show. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Eurostep here on the Eurostep Podcast Network and the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Like I said earlier, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you can get all of the great content from us and from Adam and Jordan, who should have a mailbag that is posted soon. Make sure you stay safe, everyone. Go Bucks, and we will talk to you next time.